views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. It is so delightful that you are here with us. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve.
How are you feeling today?
Just fine, thanks. I'm looking forward to this discussion on cultivating right speech. I can't believe that we're at the end of the month, that we've been talking about right speech for 4 weeks now, or we will by the end of this program.
It's been wonderful. Have you been minding your speech?
I've been trying to be careful, yes. But it does take mindfulness.
It certainly does. Observation. It's been really a wonderful month, as every month is. I find myself so inspired. And as we set out, you know, the goal of this collaboration between Spirit Fire and School for Esoteric Studies was to find ways that people could engage in spiritual practices in everyday life. You know, sometimes we hear that spiritual practices and it sounds grandiose, but actually we can find everyday ways to incorporate mindfulness and incorporate groupthink, you know, group endeavor, understanding that we are a part of a greater whole, and incorporating these ideas into our everyday life. So, you know, we've talked about right speech. We've talked about hope. And I just find that that whole month of talking about hope, I was really able to wrap my head around ways that I could generate that. And it worked so well. And again, with right speech, it's been so fun to observe conversations, even observe television and radio and what I'm listening to and how I'm responding to it. So it's been a delight. And so today we're going to talk about ways that you can cultivate right speech in your everyday life. So Dorothy, you usually start off the show with a quote. I'm so hoping you have one for to kick this one off.
Yes, I do. I'd like to use this one by Edmund Burke. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. And I think we can modify that to say the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to say nothing. Because certainly when we talked about silence, one of the things we talked about was that while sometimes it's important to remain silent, other times it's important to not remain silent, but to speak out when there is something happening that is harmful.
Yes, and we've brought that up in almost every show. You know, you've brought that forward quite a bit, that, you know, to say nothing in a certain instance. I remember you had mentioned that, I believe, on the first episode, was cowardly, that we have got to speak our truth, and sometimes that truth is in response to somebody else's untruth and wrong speech, that it's very important to step up. So just in case people are listening for the first time, it'd be great to talk about what is right speech. You know, what are the components and factors of right speech? I would say that positivity, you know, we talked about, is it kind? Is it true? Is it necessary? And so much of our Hope Show lingered with me of generating optimism, that's so important. So I think that there's that tincturing your speech with positivity and with optimism is really important, you know, to watch that what you're saying is going to inspire others, that it's got value, and that in terms of truth, that it's got integrity.
And I would agree. And I think that, know, when you talk about positivity and what we talked about with regard to hope, that one of the things we emphasized with hope is that it's not simply optimism. It is optimism coupled with a willingness to pursue a number of different options in order to achieve what needs to be achieved. So there's that sense of forward movement also.
Yes.
That right speech moves us towards a common goal.
Yes, that there's actually an action element to it, which is a lot of what you said in that in the quote that, you know, good people doing nothing is when evil will triumph. So positivity can also be just speaking the truth that you're creating options by speaking up rightly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Indeed.
I think there's also Steve, the element that while our emotions are important, they color the energy that we're projecting. If we speak only from an emotional place, we tend to be very focused on ourselves and our own state. Whereas if we can also approach it from a mental perspective where we remember the interconnection of everything, that we are more likely to speak in a way that is positive and that will move things forward.
Yeah, really, observation is so key to Dorothy, I would say, to leading a spiritual life. It's why meditation is so important, is it not? Because mm-hmm. really it allows us to, as you have said, to clear distortions in our mind, even in our emotional body. And it's so necessary to be able to observe your thoughts, because we said on a number of these shows that your thoughts become clothed when we speak, that actually speech is your thoughts made real, that it is them clothed for others to see and others to use. So certainly if our emotions are behind them, then they're not only clothed, but they're clothed with fancy, bright clothes.
Well, and we also need to remember that energy follows thought. So what we're thinking, what we're speaking, that's where the energy, that's where the force is going to go.
Yes, words definitely have force. We talked a bit about in the last show about gossip and about bullying, and certainly you can see the effects that words have on others. So we have to examine our intentions. You know, why are we saying something, which also brings in that necessity, that is it for the greater good? And does it help to, you know, create something worthwhile? So what are your intentions when you're speaking?
Absolutely, Steve. And, you know, an image came to me which has been helpful to me. And that is, if I think about my thoughts, because remembering that thoughts come before words and they themselves carry force. So we can't just push them off to the side like they're irrelevant. If I think about them being cast out, like, you know, like if you're fishing and you cast out the line, what is the intention with which I'm doing that? What's the focus? What's going to be at the other end? What am I trying to connect with? How can I make sure that that intention comes through clearly, that it's not misinterpreted? So those are some of the images that come to me when I think about the components of right speech.
Yes, is asking yourself, you know, how will these words be received? For sure. I also just come down to always thinking about building, and that we talk about thought form, that thoughts actually are made of energetic matter, that everything in our universe is matter, and that thoughts take form. And the next densification of our thoughts are our words and our speech. And then our speech leads to action, which leads to the material. So I always think of building something. You know, if we're going to collaborate or cooperate, I could build something on my own if I was going to build, a shed. And I had this idea and I started building it. I wouldn't need to say much, but if I were working with someone, I would want to speak clearly. I would want to, we would need to talk and communicate in order to work together. So we would have to be clear. Again, it comes down to truthfulness. And you know, if I said, oh, I come from a family of masons and I'm great with laying bricks and foundations, and I really wasn't, the person I was building the shed with might go on to designing the interior, and the foundation could be all wrong because I was just saying that so I looked good or something. So I always think about this idea of whenever we're building something or working together in group, speech is so important because someone is hearing you on the other end, and inevitably in collaboration, you're working together to co-create, whether it's on the physical or not. You know, if it's just energetically co-creating by working together, we've got to be clear in our energy and definitely with our words. So important.
That's true. I just feel the need to interject one thing, Steve. The basic aspect of our universe is energy, not matter. Energy becomes dense and we experience it as matter. But it's important because energy, matter has less ability to change in the moment, right? Whereas energy flows and can be directed in different directions. So I think that that's really important. I think it's also important to remember that we don't control how somebody else receives our speech.
Right.
We have ideas. The more we know somebody, the more we know about what will trigger them to misinterpret something. And we can be responsible for not purposely triggering them in that way. But right speech to me then includes active listening, right? Because we put out something, we need to listen carefully to make sure that they received what it was that we actually intended to put out. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, which means we have to, our words need to be clear. So the choice of language that we use, because that also will affect, right, how someone will receive it. So we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, let's talk a bit about that, the choice of the language that you use, because that certainly is a component of speech, is language. So more on that when we come back.
Treat the body and expand the soul on June 1st with Lynn Brown. In this all-inclusive retreat, you'll treat your body with breakout sessions in the various elements of nature. Enjoy fireside chats while harnessing the healing energy of fire. Allow more light with more ease and activate that connection between the body and spirit. Call 206-931-7356 or visit lynnmbrown.com.
Do you feel that there's a bigger, better life for you? Is there anything holding you back from living the life you were meant to live? If you'd like to find your life's true purpose and calling, join the world's foremost authority on primal spirituality, David Karsher, in Becoming a Sun Radio, emotional and spiritual intelligence for a happy, fulfilling life. Tune in once a month to Becoming a Sun Radio with David Karsher on the Dr. Pat Show and Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit davidkarsher.com today.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-972-5366.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Curious about the meaning of life? Do you want to deepen your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. The school also organizes group meditations each year to benefit humanity. Whether you're just beginning to reflect on the spiritual side of your life or are a more experienced spiritual seeker, the school warmly welcomes you to join our group. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit esotericstudies.net. That's esotericstudies.net.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy and I have been talking about ways that you can cultivate right speech. So speech is certainly built up with words. Our words make sentences and our sentences make conversation. So we've got to choose our words wisely. So choice of language, you know, that's something, Dorothy, I'd love to talk about a little bit, you know, observing the words that we use. For me, I know that at one point in my 20s, my very best friend, who I talk about quite a bit on this show because he's sort of been the one who will crack the whip on me. And he said, Steve, you know, you say there's negatives in your language all the time. You're saying don't and can't or won't. And I wasn't even aware of it, and that I could actually change my sentences around to the positive, and it would have a much greater effect, because certainly our words help us build our reality. And if our words contain negatives all the time, we're actually building somewhat of a negative reality, and we're creating an environment that is that which we don't want, because it's all we're talking about. Do you know people like that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I mean, one of the images that we use, you know, when we speak is we talk about people for whom the glass is half empty,
yeah,
versus half full. So I agree with you. I think that there's, even if the use of a negative is important to underscore what is true in a situation, to at least pair it with a positive of, so what are the implications for what we can do, what we need to do, what is going to move us forward?
Right. And so, for instance, in such a simple situation is, if I were in a group of people and one person or two people said, let's go out for pizza, and I would say, I don't really want to have pizza. Instead, I could say, let's go for a salad bar, or I'd love to go for a salad bar. Mm-hmm. You know, it's to offer what it is you do want instead of what it is you don't want. And it just makes it quicker, because it's not really necessary to say that you don't want pizza. Say what you do want, and then the group will come together. And when everybody says what they do want, you'll decide as a group. You know, it's that sort of
right
idea. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. There are some other aspects to choice of language that, well, there's so many that we can talk about, some of which we will cover today. But I'd like to bring up the issue of what's called technically tolerance for ambiguity, and that is being willing to hold open the space to consider a number of options instead of needing closure right away. And the way this comes in language is to develop a more nuanced language, so we have a wider vocabulary to choose from, instead of reverting to good, bad, sad, you know, those very actually dualistic words that are very limiting and are very polarizing. So trying to increase the nuances, the nuance in the words themselves, so that they're richer actually in the possibilities that they express, and then also trying to avoid that creation of unnecessary duality. You know, we've talked about this before. We've talked about it in the context of my book about moving beyond duality. But one of the exercises that has been very important for me, and that I need to come back to from time to time when I start to lapse, is to always mention at least three options. Mm. So if you're saying, okay, we could go for Chinese, we could go for salad bar, anybody for Italian, anybody for... So that it doesn't become an either-or situation, but we recognize that there are multiple options.
And that's what you mean by ambiguity, like creating a nuanced where it's allowing for other people to dialogue within the... to sort of create more dialogue from the dialogue.
That's right. That they are their cousin concepts. They're not the same, but they're cousin concepts. And the main thing is that if we want to truly be part of the human family as a community, we need to recognize that people have all different types of lives. They have all different purposes in their life, you know, in focuses in their life. And there needs to be room for a wide range of worldviews. One of the things that I loved, actually, I think I'm going to give this as an example, Steve, if you'll stay with me, is the fact that when you learn a language, you actually do learn a worldview. And one of the gifts from my family that I am very grateful for is that by the time I was 5, I had lived in 3 language communities. I started out speaking English. We moved to China, and I became fluent at a child's level in Mandarin. And then we had to leave as refugees, and we went to North India, and I went in from a Mandarin-speaking kindergarten into a Punjabi-speaking kindergarten.
Wow.
Not easy, challenging, but here are 2 examples of the difference between English and either of those languages. In Chinese, if you can tell the tense from the context, you don't have to give the verb tense, right? So what it tells you is that the language is highly contextual, whereas English is much more explicit. It's much more low context. And that tells you something about the society and what's important. With Punjabi, or particularly Hindustani, which is what I spoke more, if somebody knocks on the door and you respond, the response literally translated into English is, "I am already there." It's not, "I'm coming." It's, do you get the distinction? "I am already there." It shows how important it is, the importance that you place on the other person choosing to come to you.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
By speaking the language, you internalize this set of values, this worldview. So that's something that we need to be aware of in choice of language, is we have people from many different language families, all of whom bring different worldviews, and that's where that willingness to tolerate ambiguity, willingness to tolerate that there's more than one way of seeing things, becomes so important.
Right, and I'd love it if you say more about a bit about the English language and the choice of words in North America. You know, because so many people sort of criticize us for our at least here in America, for our inability to speak more than one language, and even for many that certain people I have heard, I don't want to generalize too much, but just that we don't have great facility with language and with a colorful vocabulary. You know, French is such a beautiful, very explicit. You can say so much that there's so much poetry sort of within that language, and that the American tongue, so to speak, does have a tendency to be dualistic in its own regard and in its vibration in the way we use language. Do you find that to be true, or is that just an overgeneralization?
Well, I think that is true to a certain extent, and I think it comes from, linguistically in the whole area of cross-cultural communication where I've done a lot of work. There is this idea of high context cultures like the Chinese that I gave, and low context cultures where things are very explicit. You know, people mm-hmm. talk about the U.S. as being very litigious, quick to jump to points of law. Is that exactly what was said? Is that exactly what was meant? Which is very different from other cultures where there's a lot more context that's brought to play. But I think another aspect that could help in terms of communicating with other people is the English, in my experience, has a bigger gap between what we call institutional English and conversational English. There's always some difference between, like the BBC British English, and common speech. But in the U.S., there is a habit of creating words in conversation that makes sense to a native speaker, but are extremely difficult for someone who has learned English as an institutional language, as a grammar-based language. This is not necessarily a good example, but I'll just give you one. If I said to you, I'm cigaretted out, could you put a meaning to that?
Right. Not at all. Not at all.
I can use that to convey that I've had too many cigarettes or I don't have any cigarettes. But I can make it into a word that in a sentence will make sense. But it's not a term that will appear in a dictionary. That's what I mean by conversational English.
Right. I see. Yeah.
And so we inadvertently can create communication problems by using more conversational English rather than the English that is taught.
Right. And conversational to our own specific group, almost our subculture, like almost slang.
Exactly.
That it creates. Exactly. Division just by that choice of language.
That's right. So
wow.
I actually, at one point in my professional life, wrote an article with someone who professionally teaches English, and we wrote about, I think there were like 20 different examples of things to avoid if you want to communicate clearly with somebody who is not a native speaker of English from your own area. So that much difference. And so it can create real confusion and inability to understand each other.
Right. Wow. Beautiful, Dorothy. Listen, we're at a break. We're going to come right back and talk a bit more about language. I'd love to talk a little bit about observing language and creating ways that we can all feel included when we come back.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Thrive is what we experience when our mind, body, and soul operate as one. When we thrive, we excel on all levels. Thrive is the mindset that matters. It is essential to our being. Have you ever found yourself looking for the instruction manual on how to thrive? You'll find everything you need to help you feel strong, powerful, and peaceful in your own body. So don't waste any more time. Visit ThriveByJen.com today.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Tune in to the hit show, Mouthing Off with Chef Rossi. Chef Rossi mouths off about different subjects in pursuit of breaking down walls and opening up your minds. She and Dr. Pat banter back and forth, taking from the headlines of the day on subjects that reach beyond what goes on in the world into your hearts. And go to theragingskillet.com to find out more and let Chef Rossi know what's on your mind.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spirit Fire Radio, and we're going to pick up where we were before the break. We were talking about the fact that if you are using speech to communicate, which is its purpose, it's a clothing of thought forms in an energy that can be shared with other people, then you need to think about the purpose and whether other people are going to be able to understand what it is that you're trying to communicate.
I know personally, I listen to some of the slang that kids have today, and I quite literally have no idea what they're saying. We even look at we think of hashtags in the way that language gets reduced down, which is a bit of what you were talking about in the last segment of context, that someone's got to understand the context. So being aware of what you're saying, that the listener actually knows what you're trying to express and that people aren't being left out inadvertently. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd like to just touch for, I'm sorry. I'd like to touch for a moment on how we apologize. If we think about it in terms of what we're trying to convey, if I'm apologizing to you, Steve, for something, and I want you to feel that I really am remorseful, that I recognize that I did something that was inappropriate or that was hurtful to you, just saying I'm sorry isn't going to actually do it, because it's just words. It doesn't tell you anything about what I've realized or what my intentions are. So if I say instead, I'm sorry that I explain what it is that I'm sorry for, then you know that I've actually had some recognition of what the dynamic was. And then I can say, and so in the future, I am going to do. And so I've showed you that I've thought through what an alternative would be that would be constructive rather than harmful. That's much different than just saying, I'm sorry.
It made me smile when you said that, when you said, and in the future, that just made me a little giggly because it's so beautiful. I mean, who doesn't feel met, right? in that instance. It's so easy to look at somebody and say, oh, I'm sorry. We say that all the time, even if we just bump into someone. But if you said, oh, I apologize for bumping into you. I wasn't watching where I was going. That means so much more than just bumping into someone and saying, I'm sorry. But you can imagine for something that was, you know, that was even more deserving of an apology, that you can see that it would carry so much more weight indeed to say what you're sorry for. I love that. So again, that's a bit of considering who's on the other side, which is once again being collaborative and considering another. And in its own way, you know, that's the path, right?
That's great.
Considering the other.
Mm-hmm.
I also think of go on, Dorothy.
Well, I was going to transition to the mental discipline that it takes in order to do that.
Absolutely.
Because what it means is thinking before you speak, not just blurting out anything that happens to randomly cross your mind.
Absolutely. And knowing what it is, yeah, that you're going to say. Well, not to go back, but I was thinking of what's called double voice discourse, which is thinking before you it has to do with that, where people will say, you know, oh, it's probably a silly thought, but, or, you know, oh, I might not be the best at this, but, you know, if we're not aware of what we're saying and thinking before we're speaking in that way, you don't even realize that someone is hearing you already sort of discounting what it is you're going to say. So observation, right, is so important. Of even if you just spend a week making sure, waking up in the morning and saying, I'm really going to watch my words, you know, I'm going to observe what it is that I'm saying for a whole week, I think you can discover quite a bit about yourself, right?
Right. And there's a particular pattern of speech that I find is helpful to observe. When you find yourself saying yes, but, you're usually about to undermine something or head off in a negative direction. Whereas if you think in terms of both and, yes, that's true, I hear that, and it has a very different dynamic.
Yeah, that takes some training, huh? I would think for me, right?
Yes.
But wonderful to practice that, right? Wonderful to practice that. And I also find just acknowledging what other people are saying creates space. You know, if somebody's saying something, simply saying, oh, I appreciate that. You know, and even if it's not something you agree with, that if it's something you have to ponder, or to just say, you know, I'm going to consider that, or I appreciate what you just said, it allows for space. You know, it's a bit of what you were saying of saying and as opposed to but. It's just allowing, generally, I would say. So I would love to mention, since we're talking about mental discipline, you know, mirror work, I find, is such a really beautiful exercise. It's a way to reframe our mind and the way we hear our own self speak. And to hear yourself say something out loud, like affirmations, in terms of creating a new synapses in your brain and a new vibration in the way you speak. We don't often always hear ourselves saying something gentle or kind or loving about ourselves. You know, I know that I have done mirror work when I was in my late 20s and 30s, and it was really quite wonderful, where you are actually looking in the mirror and saying, hello to yourself, and I love you, and you look great today. I mean, it sounds a little bit crazy, but if you are able to observe your responses, your physical responses, your emotional responses, and your mental responses, and really sort of write down your observations, it can help you find your voice, and it can help you just practice using words that are supportive and create new tapes. Some of us have self-criticism, or we've got tapes, like it's like a tape that's just repeating over and over and over in our head that we need to undo. And I find that affirmations can be a really wonderful way to develop right speech, not only about yourselves, but then it creates facility for putting that out in the world.
I would agree, Steve, that I just want to put a cautionary note onto affirmations. because it depends very much how we're using them. Some people use affirmations only to create an emotional space for themselves, to attract to them something that they want. It's very individualistic. It's not an affirmation in the sense of wanting to shift the energy that I bring to the group.
Right, right. So sort of on the material plane, like using the law of attraction is what
right.
you're talking about.
In a very individualistic sense.
Right, right. Yes, I would agree. I'm sort of thinking more in terms of hearing and noticing the vibration and the power of words, and that our thoughts, even if they are observing our thoughts and trying to create a way to observe thoughts that are positive and thoughts that are open-ended and expansive, as opposed to thoughts that are perhaps negative and contracted, that affirmation work can help to reverse that vibration and sort of create new synaptic firings in our brains and allows us, to speak with positivity. Whereas if that's not the case, if somebody's finding themselves finding that they're always on the negative, that affirmations can be helpful in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think it's also, do we have time before a break?
Yeah, we have about a minute.
Okay. I just wanted to mention that I think it's also important to consider right speech as being part of building the fabric of the group. And we talked about clothing the thoughts so that it's available to the other. And it can be easy to get in a group context and just have so many ideas. You just want to be talking, and forgetting that listening is as important, hearing how where other people are going with their speech and how that can build towards the common good.
Yes, indeed. I know I have had to practice that quite a bit to just simply soften, open, and receive another's words. But what's beautiful about that, I find, Dorothy, is that you will often notice the usually not noticed. If we're just bantering, if we're talking all of the time, we're obviously not receiving. And to just observe and to create space, you'll often find that you'll notice things, notice words, or notice an energy of somebody, connect to them in a way that you may not have connected before, or notice something that you hadn't noticed. So silence is truly golden. And it was a great show, the second episode, all about silence. So being a receiver is so much of that, so much of creating that space and allowing, for sure. So let's go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about action, about how words lead to action. Energy follows thought, and thought creates words, and then words beget action. So more on that when we come back.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher Sarah Luce brings her unique style to the hit show Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuOS.com.
Awareness is universal. Establishing a living awareness through meditation brings peaceful, healthy, and creative well-being into your everyday life. The practice of living awareness, Spiritfire's own meditation practice, is built on this belief and is designed for every level of practitioner. Each year, Spiritfire hosts living awareness meditation retreats that allow you to explore the practice in depth at our retreat center in beautiful Western Massachusetts. Introduce yourself to meditation and the practice at the Foundations Retreat. Attend, in silence, a silent meditation retreat focused on mindfulness, presence, and nature. Or be engaged with the meditation sittings themselves at the Deepening Retreat. Start adding to your awareness and attend a meditation retreat designed to cultivate consciousness in your everyday life. For details on attending a Living Awareness Meditation Retreat, visit upcoming events at www.spiritfire.com.
Are you feeling stagnant or blocked in your love life, career, health, or finances? Experiencing difficulty focusing or setting and achieving goals? Tune in to Spiritual Diagnostics Radio with psychic visionary healers Carol Dorian and Justice Welling. Discover the cause and effect of unwanted patterns in life. Tune in every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit spiritualdeed.com.
Be you plus live your purpose equals joy. That's the motto of Unstuck Joy with Vicki Todd. Vicki believes you were born with gifts that are meant to make the world brighter. Each show will feature an art visioning journal prompt to help you create your way to soul clarity. If you're ready to get unstuck and create more joy, this show is for you. Tune in every month on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit VickiWorldArt.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Hey, welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. We've been talking about right speech all month. It has been wonderful, and I have come to really observe the words I use, and my partner's been quite happy in my silence as well. I wanted to mention to the listeners, we're talking a bit about negatives. I know personally I've had to really watch out for that in the language that we're actually using. I think it's interesting that it's said that the subconscious automatically deletes negatives. So for instance, if I say to you, don't think of green grass, I bet you just thought of green grass, right? Or if you say, I don't want to drink so much soda, you are thinking about drinking soda and your subconscious hears and thinks drink soda. So we've got to watch the way we use words and negatives. So instead of saying, I don't want to drink so much soda, you could say, I'm going to drink more water. So it talks about the ways in which the words carry a vibration, and they are actually they actually beget action, and they move us toward a reality. So if I'm saying I'm going to drink more water, I will. My brain is going to register water, and I'm going to think about it more. So that, and it also, I wanted to get into watching out for absolutes. You know, when we say always, you know, I am always going to blah, blah, blah. There may come a time where you're not always going to do that. So watch out for saying always or never. You know, they say never, or something being impossible, because everything is possible. So it's part of being, it's being a part of this universe, which is constantly expanding, and that there are so many possibilities. So it's creating a language that has options built right into it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And another aspect of this that I'd like to emphasize, Steve, is the whole issue of inclusive language. You know, we keep coming back to the fact that we are all part of one human family. We are all, as humans, part of the whole energetic cosmos. What we do, what we say, what we think, what we feel affects everything around us to some extent or another. And so the pictures called up and the vibration of the language that we use makes a great deal of difference. And there are several arenas in which work has been done. One is the whole issue of using gender-neutral language so that we are not specifying female, male, trans, whatever, but we're using terms that are neutral enough, and oftentimes that means using plurals rather than singulars.
Yes.
So that we are being inclusive of other people. I had a very early interesting example of this where I was on the Board of Social Responsibility, Ethics and Social Responsibility of the American Psychological Association, and it was in the early days of looking at gendered language. And so all through the morning discussion, people had been using he, and when I would object, they'd say, "Oh, don't, but he includes everybody, Dorothy. Don't be so sensitive. Don't be so sensitive." So we went out to lunch. We came back after lunch, and we were talking about psychology in the high school. And suddenly, people started saying she, and I said, "Wait a minute! I thought he included everybody." Well, they said, "We're talking about high school psychologists now." And I said, you know, why does that make a difference? Well, the reality was at that point in time that high school psychologists were considered lower status. They got paid less, and they were usually women. So they were using a female pronoun to relate to them. So it was just interesting because, in fact, when using the male pronoun, it wasn't really everybody.
Right. And then almost manipulated when it was switched over. You know, they're saying it's everybody to keep it open-ended, but then there are very specific reasons why you would say she, which is very interesting, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Another example that comes up nowadays is, words have history too that we need to be aware of. So we speak about people of color, which does not have the same meaning as if we spoke about colored people, because the term colored has a particular history
that
is quite negative.
And it can be such an adventure, right, Dorothy? I mean, when you start to really ponder this and feel into it, you realize that that you're creating something with your words. You're actually painting a picture. So to say people of color has got a very definite vibration to it, whereas colored people culturally has a very different vibration. So it really is about taking responsibility, but also about knowing and studying these nuances as well. I mean, you've really got to take time with your words. They are powerful. Indeed.
Right, which brings us back to mindfulness, right? Just thinking before you speak. I wanted to share an example, and I think you may have one to share too. I became aware when I was doing a lot of international traveling that I would often travel and I would end up at a destination where I was part of a meeting, whether it was a board meeting or something like that. And if I had one of these meetings within 24 hours of one of those long international trips where I'd gone through a number of time zones, I found it almost impossible to keep my mouth shut. It was really, really interesting. It was like I wanted to comment on everything. And I had a lot of difficulty sitting on myself to exert the kind of mental discipline that I would normally display in a meeting where I would listen carefully to other people and speak if I had something to add that hadn't already been brought up, instead of commenting on everything that was going on.
Just because you were excited?
Because I was tired.
Oh.
Tired, right? I realized it only happened when I was completely jet-lagged. And so if I ended up at a meeting where I had been traveling a lot and I was, I still hadn't adjusted to the time zone, I was still kind of out of it, I needed to be extremely conscious of monitoring my speech.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
that,
excited because and that, you're exhausted. Fumes, right?
Yeah, but that clued me to the kind of energy that normally I would exert to make sure that I was screening out when I didn't need to speak, and that I was listening carefully.
Right. Very good point. That it does take energy. Very, very good point. It showed you that. You know, I would also say I noticed during this show that I actually said mankind. And you know, mm-hmm. you were talking about gender, and it was interesting because I have over the many years become very I've been observing gender neutral language, and I will catch myself. So I think it's important to let people know too that it's also good to just allow it to be and observe. And I noticed, and I said, the next time I will say humankind, and that actually is will build the world I want to live in. One that is very clear and inclusive and includes everybody. But it's important not to sort of berate yourself or feel bad or, oh, why did I say that? I'm still saying that. You know, it was an interesting moment that I caught myself and said, oh, there you go again. It's still in your psyche. Move on. So we've got to learn to just observe ourselves and give ourselves space and beautiful words creating the world we'd like to live in. Dorothy, we're at the end of the show. It's been so interesting. I've really enjoyed our conversation and, of course, all that you bring to the table. It's a delight. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. And it's going to be really interesting, Steve, to turn our attention next month to right action.
I love it. Right action. It is going to be so interesting. I have a feeling we're going to be talking quite a bit about humanity, which was the first month, and what it is we're doing here on this planet, right, Dorothy? Right action. We've got to get it together. I look so forward to it. So end of the show. Thank you so much, listeners. SpiritFireRadio.com. You can find out all the topics for the rest of the year and send us an email to SpiritFireRadio@SpiritFire.com. All right. See you next week, Dorothy.
See you, Steve.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit SpiritFireRadio.com.